Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're not actually going to do a verse from the Bhagavatam today, but I thought it would be appropriate to chant that anyway, because the subject matter is Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was asked, I believe it was San Francisco. Yeah, it was San Francisco, 1967 or 8, during the question and answer period to a class, one young lady asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, is Joan of Arc in the Bhagavatam? And Prabhupada said, why do you take Joan of Arc out of the Bhagavatam? And he went on to explain that Bhagavatam means the pastimes of Krishna and his devotees, and his pure devotees. That's Bhagavatam. So this is Bhagavatam. This morning we're going to try to speak about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and also try to say something about Gadadhar Pandit. Today is also his disappearance day. I'm going to try to be concise as I possibly can, specifically for the reason that I might omit something that's very important. So I'm hoping that those of you here, everybody, it's not like I'm the only one who knows about Bhakti. We all know about Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gadadhar Pandit. We've grown up with them in Krishna consciousness. And if I omit something that's important, hopefully somebody will catch that and they can add it at the end of the class. So, in the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I would like to submit that I'm feeling very unqualified and undeserving to give this class, but for my own purification and due to the shameless nature, I'm going to try to take the opportunity and try to glorify both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gadadhar Pandit, and hope I can say something that's worthwhile. Well, since I mentioned that, I'll lead on from that. That was one of the first things that, one of my first impression or contact impression of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was received by reading the translations to the songs he wrote, which appear in our songbook. You know, really, there's only two authors in the songbook. One is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and the other is Narottam Das Thakur. Every morning, we sing two of his songs, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs. Jai Radha Madhava was a song that was composed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Yasomati Nandana is a song that's composed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur is the author of the song we sing when we're worshiping Srila Prabhupada. So, we had that songbook. I joined in middle of April 1973. We already had that, the Vaishnav songbook. And I remember reading the translations to the songs. And in particular, there was a song, Gopinath, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was a long song. And I was reading it, and he's describing himself as being such a lowly, fallen person. And it was actually, because I was a brand new devotee at the time, and it was bewildering. I thought, oh my God, if he's one of the acharyas, and if he's feeling like this about himself, what hope is there for me? Because he's describing himself, you know, as being so fallen, and et cetera, et cetera. So, but I mean, I didn't understand at that time that that was an expression of the internal potency of the Lord, that, you know, that was the qualities of a pure devotee. He's expressing himself like that. But yeah, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was extremely humble. Extremely humble. That was an outstanding quality of his. And he came across like that on many different occasions. One was, I'm jumping ahead here, but I'll go back to one such occasion was he went door to door at one point after he discovered the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, which was also is an interesting pastime connected with that. He was living in, I forget which place it was, but he was contemplating moving to another place. Perhaps it was Jagannath Puri. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya came to him in a dream and said, in so many words, hey, wait a second, where are you going? You have some work that you have to do for me in this such and such place. And, you know, Lord Chaitanya said, what about such and such place? What about Navadvip? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he woke up, he was kind of, now what is that all about, you know? Anyway, he came to the conclusion that Lord Chaitanya was encouraging him. He was getting an encouragement from Lord Chaitanya to do something to try to ascertain the true birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And one day he was chanting on the roof of a Dharamshala, yeah. And he noticed a very effulgent light coming from a tree, a tall tree, off in the distance. And he could understand from that was the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And then he conducted research by studying different scriptures, the Navadvip Mahatmya, and you know different scriptures that were dealing with the activities of the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the Vaishnavas at that time. And also he consulted Jagannath Das Babaji and other very elderly people in the area. And the conclusion of all his research was, yeah, for sure, that is the birthplace. That's the factual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So he went on to excavate that birthplace and establish it. And he developed Mayapur. So when he was developing Mayapur, he wanted to build a temple, an impressive temple at the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So he went door to door. He personally went door to door begging everybody to give a donation for the building of that temple. So this was, you know, example of his humility. But so going back a little bit, so Srila Prabhupada gave one lecture about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It was on his appearance day. 1971 in London. And but appearance day, disappearance day for these great Vaishnavas are really not much difference. You know, they're never really disappearing. They're part of Krishna's eternal Leela. So anyways, but at least on this occasion, I'll try to extract the most significant essential points Prabhupada made about Bhaktivinoda Thakur during this lecture. The first point he made was that he was an acharya in the disciplic succession, and he actually went on to say, that not only he wasn't just an acharya in our disciplic succession, he actually can be given credit for reintroducing the disciplic succession. At the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was born in 1838. So at that time, Vaishnavism had fell into disrepute due to the deviation of some followers of Lord Chaitanya after the generation of Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya and Shyamananda Goswami. Shortly after that, a lot of Sahajiyas became prominent, and there was what were called the apasampradayas, the owls, the bowels, the karti bhajas. I don't remember all. There's 13 of them. There were 13 apasampradayas, and basically these were sahajiyas. They were kind of focusing in on Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, and you know they're making a farce out of devotional service, and so. What happened was, as a result of that, intelligent, well-educated, pious people just started considering Vaishnavism as a religion for very low-class and impious people, and they didn't take it seriously. So this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's initial contact with, that's where Vaishnavism was at when he first came in contact with it. And but fortunately, he didn't get discouraged by that. He was able to kind of, just like Prabhupada gives the example of when his father used to go to take bath in the Ganges, sometimes there'd be feces just, floating on. His father would just push it away and He understood the value of the Ganges. So same way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was able to just kind of push past this superficial stuff and appreciate the essence of and the importance of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. When he was about 22 years old, he, with great difficulty, it's described, got copies of both the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he read them avidly. He just, again and again, he really became absorbed, and that was how his appreciation developed. So much so that, as I said, eventually he's given credit as having reintroduced the disciplic succession, you know, by his amazing preaching. You know, because at that point there was not much of a following left of proper following of you know, Lord Chaitanya at that point. But he reestablished that. So Prabhupada also made the point that he was an ideal guru. He was not a sannyasi. He was a grihastha. And he had a lot of worldly duties. He actually was... He was married twice. His first wife died giving birth to his first child, so he married again. I think he had almost a dozen children, something plus or minus. And he was a magistrate. He was he held the highest position that an Indian bodied person was allowed to have in the British government. So he was very qualified in that sense. But it didn't prevent him from engaging very seriously in devotional service. Prabhupada described his daily sadhana was he would wake up. He started it from when he took rest. He said he would take rest about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the evening, and wake up at midnight. And when he woke up at midnight, he would immediately start working on books. He produced over 100 spiritual books during his lifetime. So that's what he did from midnight up until basically when he took breakfast and went to work. So for 5-6 hours or so, he was studying and writing and reading like that, chanting, of course. And that was, he did that on a regular daily basis. So Papa, in describing that, he made note of the fact that he was, he reduced his sleeping. He was only sleeping maximum 4 or 5 hours a night. And same thing, he was very regulated and renounced in his eating as well. And he preached. Even as a grihastha, he preached, and Prabhupada, in the lecture, he quoted that verse, Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasi, Sudra Kena, Noye, Krishna Tattva Veta Se Gudhoi, that it doesn't matter whether one is a Brahmin or a sannyasi or even a Sudra. If somebody knows the science of Krishna, then they're qualified. They can become a spiritual master. So Prabhupada, he said he gave the ideal example, because he was a grihastha and he had many worldly duties, he had a big family, but still he managed to do a lot, to practice and spread Krishna consciousness. So he was the acharya in that sense as well. And then Prabhupada went on to relate what I guess he considered one very important incident in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This occurred when he was about 35 years old. He was, as I said, he was a deputy magistrate. And I think by that time he was already living in the Jagannath Puri area. So there was this one yogi. His name was Utkal. And he was living in the villages. And he was claiming to be Lord Vishnu. He had two associates, one named Brahma, one named Shiva. And he had some mystic power. He actually had the mystic power. He had immunity to fire. He was able to, he'd be sitting there in front of a fire, and he could kind of dip his head into the fire and bring it out, and he wouldn't get burned. So people, when they saw that, they thought, maybe he is Vishnu, because no ordinary human being could do that. Well, it's true. No ordinary human being could do that. But there's a great gap of difference between somebody who's not an ordinary human being, and somebody that's Vishnu. And he had some mystic power. That's a fact. And he also was able to make fire come from his head. So anyway, so what got him in trouble, though, was that he was claiming that he was the Supreme Lord and that he was going to drive the British out of India. So the British heard about this, and they decided, well, this guy is a political threat. So he should be dealt with. And aside from that, there were a lot of complaints, coming from the villagers about how he was performing Rasa Leela, supposedly, like that, with different village women who were being sent to him like that. He was exploiting for his sense gratification. So anyway, so the one person, high up personality, Commissioner Ravenshaw, approached Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They thought he would be the right person to deal with him. And they told him what the complaints were, what their concerns were, and what the complaints about him were. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, okay. So he went there with a whole, some other people, and he approached him. And so this yogi, he had some mystic power. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he appeared on the scene, he said, oh, you are Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, actually, at that time he was called Kedarnath Dutt. He hadn't received that honorific title of Bhaktivinoda Thakur yet. He says, oh, so you are Kedarnath Dutt. Yes, I know all about you. You're a very good person. So I will make you king of India. Please do not disturb my activities. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his response was, yeah, thank you very much. So you are such a great yogi, but why are you here in the forest like that, in the village, in the forest? You should come to Jagannath, Jagannath Puri and see Lord Jagannath in the temple. So this yogi went, oh, Jagannath, he is wood. That is wood. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur became angry like fire, Prabhupada describes, because Arche Shiladir, it's like he's blaspheming the Supreme Lord. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't prepared to tolerate that. He actually ordered him to be arrested at that time. So he came with, I think it was said, 30 constables and 70 policemen. I don't know the difference between a constable and a policeman, but anyway, he came with a lot of people to do that job. And they were kind of scared at first, but anyway, he led the way, and they arrested him. And they brought him to trial. And during the first day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter, his first child, became really sick. I mean, high fever. She ran, it was 105, I think it was described, and she was on the verge of death. And everybody was saying that this was because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was offending Vishnu, And this man had a lot of, he had people complaining about him, but he also had thousands and thousands of supporters, people who believed that, he must be Vishnu, otherwise how could he do these things like that? So anyway, so there's a lot of pressure on Bhaktivinoda Thakur to back off. I mean, a lot. There was the public, and these people were outside the courthouse and they were chanting, free Vishikshena, free whatever, like that. And but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, no. And then people were saying to him, said, look, you better don't just let him go, otherwise you could have more problems. And he said, yeah, let us all die. He said, let us all die, referring to his family members, but this rascal has to be punished, So the trial went on. It went for 18 days, I believe. And on the last day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself became ill like his daughter. And he ran a very high fever, like 105, same thing, which is like, you're close to death when your fever is that high. And I think they had to bring him into the courthouse on a stretcher. He was very ill, but he presided over the hearing that day, and at the end of the thing, they pronounced this guy guilty, and they sentenced him to 6 months in prison. No, sorry, 18 months in prison. That's what it was. And on the trial, it was the seventh day or the eighth day. I was getting confused. So they sentenced him to 18 months in prison. And right after that, when they were... So they were getting ready to haul him off to jail. And I don't know where the suggestion came from. Somebody said his hair should be cut, you know. And because apparently yogis, I don't know, can't explain it or don't, but yogis, somehow they keep some mystical power. The power is stored within their hair somehow. I can't explain how that works, but that was understood. That this yogi throughout the whole time of his imprisonment, he hadn't ate anything or drank anything, and so that was a suspicion that he had some mystic power and the hair had something to do with it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur ordered that the barber cut his hair, and everybody was afraid to do it because they didn't want the reaction. They want to get on the wrong side of this guy who's powerful. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur came forward and did it himself. He said, okay, I'll do it. And he was really sick, as I said. But he just went and he cut off all his hair. And sure enough, as soon as he cut off his hair, the guy, the yogi, fell unconscious on the floor. So, there was some connection there. And they hauled him off to jail. And after a couple of months, he managed to take poison and die. So Prabhupada's, commented, he's a very strong man. He wasn't afraid. On the one hand, he was very, very humble, very, very meek, presenting himself as being very unqualified, very deserving, but at the same time, on the right occasions, for the right cause, for the right reasons, he was powerful, like anything, like fire. Another example of that is when he went to Vrindavan, he went on Parikram in Vrindavan, and there were these, not dacoits and rogues, they referred to them as Kunjaharis. They were like, they were people they harassed, molested, robbed, sometimes even killed the pilgrims who were coming on pilgrimage to the holy places. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he encountered that, and he did a lot of work with the government, in conjunction with the government, to get rid of them. So, he wasn't just a turn the other cheek kind of Vaishnav. For the right, as I said, in the right situations, for the right reasons, he was prepared to take action. And of course, another important point that incident illustrates was, the importance of the deity. And Prabhupada elaborated upon that in his lecture that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was showing by his own example the importance and the significance of deity worship. That because, the British, their reason for wanting to get rid of this guy was they thought he was a political threat. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his reason for taking up the task was because, he was an offender. He was an offender to Vaishnavism. He thought that the deity was wood, and he was, of course, engaging in all these sinful activities, and then, posing as a devotee of Krishna. So, on this point of reintroducing the disciplic succession, aside from his own preaching, it's well known that he prayed for a ray of Vishnu. At one point, Bhaktivinoda of Thakur prayed to Krishna, prayed to Lord Chaitanya, "Your teachings are very much depreciated. It is not within my power to restore them." And he prayed that, "Please send somebody to help." A child like that. So anyway, that was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was considered the answer to that prayer of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a personality that was empowered like that. Another interesting incident, in relation to both Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Bhaktivinoda Thakur are eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya. They're both, according to Vaishnav literature, they're manjaris. They're actually part of the very intimate associates of Lord Krishna in the spiritual world, and they descended for the purpose of assisting Lord Chaitanya in the Sankirtan movement. So some evidence of that is, at least in the life of Bhaktisiddhanta, was when that he was anyway, I'll skip that because I don't want to get sidetracked here, but when Bhaktisiddhanta was about 7 or 8 years old, He went with his father to his initiating guru. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's initiating guru was a Vipin Bihari Lal. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was more like a formality. I mean, he respected him, but it wasn't like he was his main, this person was not his main source of inspiration, but he, you know, he was a, to some extent, a bona fide Vaishnav spiritual master like that, so he took that initiation from. But his Shiksha gurus were Jagannath Das Babaji, who he got associated with on various occasions, and also Gaurakishore Das Babaji. But anyway, he did take initiation from. So one time he went with his son to visit his guru, and he paid like a prostrated obeisances, and Vipin Bihari Lal placed his feet on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's head. And as you know, gurus sometimes do. Anyway, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur then got up, he left, and Bhakti Siddhanta took that opportunity to, he chastised him. He said, you know, you're thinking that, you know, in so many words, he basically said, I think you're, you know, kind of gone a little bit beyond your qualification here. I mean, you're thinking of my father as some ordinary person who's your disciple, but he's actually one of the eternal associates of Lord Chaitanya, and you shouldn't do that. You know, you're making a mistake by placing your feet on his head. I think my advice to you is, you know, you should not do that again. And apparently he took it seriously. So anyway, so it was understood by Bhaktisiddhanta at a young age who his father was, and he was correct. And the final point Prabhupada made in this lecture was that the worship of these Vaishnavacharyas is extremely important. He quoted the Sanskrit verse Mad Bhakta Pujyadika, which means that Krishna is pleased when people worship him, but he's even more pleased when people worship his pure devotee. So and Prabhupada made the point that if you're advancing in devotional service and Krishna consciousness, it's more important to worship the Acharya than it is even to worship Krishna himself. So that was the what I thought was the most important points that Prabhupada made about Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his lecture. Gadadhar Pandit was, of course, is one of the members of the Panchatattva. Gadadhar Pandit is none other than Radharani, Srimati Radharani. Although Gadadhar Pandit is not in the same mood as Radharani. Radharani is, you know, traditionally understood as she was kind of like aggressive and contrary, and you know, she wasn't like submissive. She wasn't like your submissive gopi. So it's described that Gadadhar Pandit was Radharani, but with that part of her removed. But no, Lord Chaitanya took the feisty qualities of Radharani, you know, when he appeared as Lord Chaitanya, the combined form of Radha and Krishna, and what was left, that was Gadadhar Pandit. That's how it was, it was described. So he was more in the mood of like Rukmini. He was very submissive. You know, he's described as having been very, from birth, you know, from a very young age, serious, self-composed, sober, peaceful, renounced, like that, you know, like Rukmini. And he was a constant companion of Lord Chaitanya. They were childhood friends. And in his childhood, Lord Chaitanya was very, precocious. He was not displaying Vaishnav qualities as a young man. He didn't until he got initiated by Ishvara Puri in Gaya at, 16 years old. Yeah, 15, 16 years old. Up until that point, he was quite a rascal, actually. And Gadadhar Pandit, and he used to, they were classmates and friends, companions, but he was always harassing Gadadhar Pandit, asking him challenging questions. And, you know, Gadadhar Pandit was trying to be a very nice devotee, and Lord Chaitanya was kind of challenging and so forth and so on. And Gerardo Panda was kind of torn within himself because one part of him, he was very attracted. He always wanted to be in the association with Lord Chaitanya, but he couldn't. He found it hard to tolerate when he was behaving like that. So anyway, and he complained to Lord Chaitanya about this. And Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry, don't worry. He said, in very short time, I'm going to become a great devotee, even much greater devotee than even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. So get out of it. And sure enough, that was what happened. Lord Chaitanya, I think around 15, 16 years old, he went to Gaya. He took initiation from Ishvara Puri. Actually, now that I'm mentioning Ishvara Puri, Gadadhar Panda got the mercy of Ishvara Puri. As an earlier stage, Ishvara Puri stayed at the home of Gopinath Acharya for a few months. And during that time, Gadadhar Panda would go there, and Ishvara Puri appreciated his submissive nature and his interest in Krishna consciousness, and he gave him a lot of mercy. So, let's see what else here. Oh, yeah. One very significant incident in the life of Gadadhar Panda was when he was also very close friends with Mukunda Dutt. And they had, together, they would always, when some very prominent Vaishnav would visit where they lived, they would go. They tried to get his association. So on one occasion, Pundarik Vijayaniti had come to their village, and Mukunda Dutt was aware of this, and he was encouraging Gadadhar Panda, come on, let's go get his dart, let's go see him. So Gadadhar Panda was, okay, sounds like a good idea, and they went. And when they got there, Gadadhar Panda became totally bewildered because Pundarik Vijayaniti, superficially, he appeared like a gross materialist. You know, he was dressed in silk and lying on a couch and had pan and betel nuts, and he was being fanned, and there had servants spraying perfumes around the room. And, you know, so Gadadhar Panda said, what is this? You know, what kind of Vaishnava is he? And he was thinking critically, offensively about him. And Mukunda Dutt could understand that was what was going on in Gadadhar Panda's mind. So he started chanting some shlokas from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from a certain section of the Srimad Bhagavatam about some of the more rasika pastimes of Krishna. And upon hearing this, Pundarik Vijayaniti went into ecstasy, basically. And he started, you know, swooning. And finally he just rolled off his couch and unconscious. And those Gadadhar Panda could understand that this was a genuine manifestation of ecstatic love for Krishna. And at that time he realized what a mistake he'd made by thinking like that about Pundarik Vijayaniti. And he came to the conclusion that the only way I can repent for this is I could beg him for initiation. So, and he told that to Mukunda Dutt. So when Pundarik Vijayaniti regained consciousness, Mukunda Dutt explained to him what was going on. And Pundarik Vijayaniti expressed great joy that to have such a qualified disciple, and that's what happened. He actually became a disciple of Pundarik Vijayaniti, who in Krishna Leela is Vrishabhanu, the father of Radharani, interestingly enough. So that was a very important incident. And then there was another incident where this was after Lord Chaitanya had already taken initiation, and he was feeling a lot of, I can't remember where they were, but he was feeling a lot of separation from Krishna. And Gadadhar Panda appeared on the scene, and Lord Chaitanya was asking him, where can I find Krishna? I can't find Krishna. Where can I, where is Krishna? Where can I find Krishna? And he kind of caught Gadadhar Panda off guard. He didn't know what to say to him. So he just said, well, he's in your heart. So Lord Chaitanya said, he didn't say anything. He's in my heart. And he put his nails, to his chest and in the mood of like trying to rip open his chest to find Krishna in his heart. And Gadadhar Panda grabbed his hands to try to, prevent him from doing that. And Lord Chaitanya was saying, no, stop, don't interfere like that. And Gadadhar Panda had to, you know, spoke to him in such a way that he was able to calm him down. He said, no, just be patient. You know, Lord Chaitanya, Krishna will appear. Just, you know. Anyway, he was able to turn his mind and get him to calm down and stop trying to rip open his chest to get Krishna. So Sachimata was observing all this from a distance. And when she saw that, she came to the conclusion, this boy, Gadadhar Pandit, is very smart. He knows how to, you know, deal with my son. So she requested him at that point that he should always be with Lord Chaitanya. He should be like his constant companion and protect him. And then she said, then I won't have to worry about him. So he accepted that request. So when Lord Chaitanya went to Nabadweep, actually there's a couple more pastimes. At the home of Shuklambara Brahmachari, Lord Chaitanya was there with the devotees and they were having kirtan and it was very ecstatic. And Gadadhar Pandit was on the veranda. The kirtan was going on inside the house and he was on the veranda. So when Lord Chaitanya and all the devotees had kind of quieted down, they heard this wailing and crying and like that, and it worked out it was Gadadhar Pandit. He was out, as I said, on the veranda, and he was just feeling too much separation, overwhelmed by ecstatic emotions. And so when Lord Chaitanya saw that, you know, he glorified him. He said, actually, my life is worthless because I was such a rascal, you know, in the early stages of my life, but you've been a pure devotee of Krishna right from your birth. You know, he was recalling how Gadadhar Pandit was always a pure devotee, you know, throughout, you know, right from the beginning like that. So he glorified him like that. And anyway, when Lord Chaitanya went to Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit went with him. He accompanied him. And also, there was one pastime, I can't remember how it happened, but the Lord Chaitanya gave him a deity, Toda Gopinath. They found it, they were excavating, I can't remember the detail here, but anyway, that Gadadhar Pandit, he became the pujari for that deity, Toda Gopinath. And he used to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam daily. And Lord Chaitanya would come and hear from him. You know, he was beautiful recitation, and his understanding was so deep that even Lord Chaitanya, Bhakeshwara Pandit, Lord Nityananda, all these great, great, great devotees would come and to hear Gadadhar Pandit recite and explain the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he actually took, at one time he took a vow, Gadadhar Pandit took a vow of Kshetra Sannyas, that meant he would stay there. He would stay in that one place and worship. But when Lord Chaitanya wanted to go to Vrindavan, Gadadhar Pandit said he wanted to go. And Lord Chaitanya was not happy with that. Gadadhar Pandit's reasoning was, well, you're my Toda Gopinath. I mean, you know, you're actually my deity. You're Krishna himself, and I want to go with you, wherever you go. But Lord Chaitanya said, no, it won't look good, or set a bad example. So he insisted that Gadadhar Pandit remain where he was. And as I said, Gadadhar Pandit was in the mood of submissive, like Rukmini. So he accepted that. It was very difficult for him, but he accepted that, and he stayed there. And then, I guess, Lord Chaitanya, there's four different ideas presented about how Lord Chaitanya departed. But one of them is that he actually merged into the Toda Gopinath deity. He entered into that temple and then that was it. You know, was not seen any further. So, in any event, after Lord Chaitanya departed, Gadadhar Pandit was approximately the same age as Lord Chaitanya. He was, maybe there was 1 year difference. I don't know, who can't remember who was older, who was younger. But right after that, Gadadhar Pandit aged very rapidly. No, it's supernaturally. It's just he became like an old man, quote unquote, overnight. He aged very rapidly to the point where he couldn't even reach out his arms to, because, you know, the deities are all standing up. He couldn't even extend his arms to put the garland on the Toda Gopinath deity. And it's described that Todagopinath sat down. It's a marble deity. And the Todagopinath sat down to make it convenient for Gadadhar Pandit to place the garland on him. It's the only sitting deity. And actually, when in the process of sitting down, the marble cracked in the knee. And it's also said that that's Lord Chaitanya entered into that. But, yeah. So, sometimes Lord Chaitanya is referred to, just to give you an idea of how the importance of Gadadhar Pandit, sometimes Lord Chaitanya is referred to as Gadadhar Prananath. It's one of the names of Lord Chaitanya, which means the life of Gadadhar Pandit, and also Gadaira Gora, or in other words, the Gora of Gadadhar Pandit. And their worship, the worship of, sometimes we worship Gornatai, but some devotees worship Gaur Gadadhar, but it's not meant for the neophytes. It's actually worship in Madhurya Ras. It's very elevated like that. So that's it. I hope I didn't speak too long. I don't have a watch, and I can't see the clock from this thing. 8:30, not too bad. No prasad, right. So does anybody have any things, comments, things I missed? You know, very important parts of either the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur or a Gadadhar Pandit that I omitted that you'd like to add at this point, or any question or anything like that? Yeah. Okay, just speak up and I'll... Yeah, that was in the very early part of his life. He was, the question was, the gentleman read that Bhaktivinoda Thakur at some point seemed to have some attraction for Christianity. And I read that in one of the biographies when I was preparing for the class, but this particular biography presented his life in chronological order. That took place at a very early stage of his life, pretty much when he was in his student part of his life. And it wasn't that he was appreciating Christianity more than Vaishnavism. It was more than at that point he hadn't come in contact really with Vaishnavism particularly. I mean, his father was a Vaishnav, but the rest of his family was not very inclined towards They were Shaktas, right. They weren't much inclined to Vaishnavism. So, and he was, Bhaktivinoda's exposure at that point was to Advaita Vedanta philosophy. So he was able to appreciate, he actually had some preference for Christian theology as opposed to Advaita Vedanta. That's the explanation that I would give for that. So, Vaishnav culture, on birthdays and auspicious occasions, rather than get gifts, like, you know, when somebody has a birthday, and here in Western society, everybody expecting to get presents. But in Vaishnav culture, when it's your birthday, you give presents, you see? So on auspicious occasions, you give in charity. So on that note, guess what's underneath this blue sheet? Can anybody guess what's underneath this blue sheet? Yeah. Can anybody guess what kind of presents? Gotta have a little fun, you know. So nobody will guess. Svas actually knows, but he doesn't realize. Can you guess, Svas Prabhu? What's underneath the blue sheet? I gave him a clue yesterday, but he's kind of forgotten. Okay, so I'll unveil it. Da-da-da-da. These are picture frames, okay? So what I'd like to do is, if anybody has a devotional picture that they'd like to frame, please take a frame, or you can take more than one. And I'd like to give these as gifts to devotees who would like to use them to frame a devotional picture. You could take for yourself, you could take for a friend if you'd like, or take more than one. They're all in good condition. And I have bigger ones, actually. that, but I couldn't carry them over here. So if anybody has a bigger picture that they'd like to frame, feel free to just let me know, and I'll show you the bigger frames, and you could have one of those. So that's the end of the class. Thank you very much. Bhakti Vinod Thakur Ki Jai. Siddharthar Pandit Ki Jai. Yeah, you can go through them. Yeah, sure. You can have more than one. There you go. Help yourself. You're welcome. Oh, that's not a picture frame, but that, you can have that if you want it, but it's just like something to put hot things on. Yeah, yeah. Maybe you could use something from the museum. And Yeah, they're all in good condition. You could take that picture out and just, you know, it's not. No, it's just some family members. I have bigger ones if you need a bigger one. Yeah, they're all in good condition. I'll take you up to the apartment and I'll show you the big ones. Yep, thank you. So you want to see the big ones? Let's go. Sure. Get your frames so you have to put your own devotional picture in there.
Thank you.
Does that sound okay?
That was difficult.
This one might be difficult. I don't know. Might want to choose another plan.
So this should be okay.
I'll probably have to tear up this paper. And yeah, this one's not going to be fashioned in the staples anymore.
Yeah, it's installed.
Yeah. Just you bend the staples and you can do that. Does that sound okay?
Is that the room? Yeah. Good question. It's like, you also noted that, you know, it's like there were so many operas and desires and things, you know, that they came deep to, like, get to its, like, original. And, like, going to Vrindavan, you see that, you know, it's like how, like, whoever that's there comes from Bhakti Siddhanta. Mm-hmm. Right? But there are a few other sampradayas coming from Chaitanya that are not coming from Bhakti Siddhanta. So, what does it mean? Does it mean that those are like part of those like proper sampradayas?
Yeah, go for it. Probably the ones that aren't are probably those other sampradayas.
There are so many like Goswamis also. There are so many Goswamis.
Yeah, Goswamis.
Is it your birthday or Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur's?
No, it's Bhakti Vinod Thakur's.
This is
like all the auspicious days in this culture.
Oh, on auspicious days.
Yeah, so.
Who knows? It was your birthday in the beginning. This isn't your family, is it?
Yeah, but don't forget, it's nothing. It's just like I have a thousand family pictures, and they're not close family. And all I would do is take those pictures out and put them in a box, and you know, somebody would be dealing with them, and I'd leave my dad.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've been thinking about that.
Well, you don't want to look at the pictures so much. And, well, that's just it's a hot plate.
Well, it's a hot plate.
Yeah. You know, like you have hot plates.
even remotely.
They sound like it.
Fabulous. Wonderful. Thank you. Yes, thank you for wonderful thoughts. Well, I think I might want to just keep this one and not cream it. And just use this up. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay. I have more at my house that I figured, you know, I just couldn't carry them.
Keep it as a remembrance of your mom.
Sorry?
Keep it as a remembrance of your mom.
All right. Well, she went out as a boss now. She really did, you know. I mean, she's.
Do you think that she needed
a point of view? She was talented, but not in particular. Yep.
I
have
one more.
Okay, you let me know.